God never intended for us to use our brain as a paperweight or doorstop. God even gave us the basic command to think. He included a laid out plan of what to think about. It's written in Philippians 4:8. He said, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." The end result of not thinking is often scars. And that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight. And we'll start off a story that few of you have heard. I call it, "What is stupid?" I like to define, "What is stupid?" Now, when I was growing up at home, little kid, I and my brother, you had all kinds of toys. One of our favorite was the box fan. All of you remember the old box fan? The box fan was fun because you'd get behind it when it's going full blast and you could sing. And you'd sing in the box fan and you had opera. It was wonderful. And the other thing you liked to do was stick things through little cracks into the box fan. I was like, and we had an old box fan, had seen better days. Had a little break or two in it here and there. And my brother and I are playing with the box fan. And we decided to stick the pencil in there. So he's sticking the pencil in there. This is not stupid. This is fun. See, singing's fun. Stick the pencil in there. It's fun. And he's having a fun old time. And he stuck it in too far. The old metal blades caught that pencil and yanked it into the fan. Without a second thought, he stuck his fingers through where one of those little slats on the back had broke to grab that pencil. Now, that was not dumb. That was a mistake. Bad judgment. That was not dumb. Needless to say, he yanks his hand out. It's bleeding all over the place. He is screaming, running up the stairs, bawling his eyes out. And I, having seen that, without turning off the fan, without giving it a second thought, stuck my hand in the same dumb hole. That happened over 40 years ago, and I still carry the scars. That's stupid. Scars are the end results of our actions, carelessness, our mistakes, and sometimes our stupidities. This morning, this afternoon, we're going to talk about scars of heart, scars of soul, scars of life. Now, my favorite book out of the Bible, Ecclesiastes, followed up by James, both of them very practical books. I'm not a very practical person. But we're going to go to Ecclesiastes if you care to. We're going to read Ecclesiastes 11, 9 through 12, 1. Ecclesiastes 11, 9. "Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth. Walk in the ways of thine heart and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from thy heart and put away evil from thy flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." Chapter 12, 1. "Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the year draweth nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them." What are the days of thy youth? I'd suggest to you tonight, the days of our youth mean now, before it's too late, before the scars. A large part of the struggle that goes on between teenagers and parents, teenagers and teachers, any authority at all, is a desire of the teen to be able to make their own decisions, to choose their own direction, than you here in this room that aren't teenagers. You've already arrived. You've achieved. You're making your own decisions and choosing your own direction and living with those choices. Some of us supposedly have earned our stripes, been promoted to adulthood, and we're on our own. Here is the problem. God wants so much to be a part of our life in easy times and in hard times. But we fought so long to be independent, to chance to stand on our own, that we end up trying to be independent from God. We leave Him out of the times when we need Him the most. In our verses, Solomon warns us of a coming time of deep regrets, evil days that we'll look back on with no pleasure of memory. We're warned now to remember God, remember what He has to say about things, to remember His judgment while we're still young. Solomon's advice to us, summed up, is stop and think about what you do before it's too late. At any action, any decision, any choice or crossroads, consider the scars. If you're following along with me, I'm going to flip down to 2 Samuel 12. The life of David is a powerful example of scars. He was hand-chosen by God to be king of God's chosen people in God's stead. David's forever recorded as a man after God's own heart, loving the things God loved. But in 2 Samuel 1, in chapter 2, a decision shows up in David's life. For time's sake, we're just going to recap those decisions. David, his armies are off to battle. David, as king, should be leading those forces. But his armies have it in control. His generals know what they're doing. And he decides to hang around the palace, twiddle his thumbs, be bored. During this time period, we find a day when he lays eyes on a lady named Bathsheba. Not his wife, somebody else's. But the desire for her grows in him. And soon he pulls her into the palace, commits adultery with this lady. And then he's got to cover it up and hide it. So he plots, plans, and murders her husband. As a king, he had to memorize the laws of God. He knew them. Leviticus 20:10, "And the man that committeth adultery with another man's wife, even he that committeth adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death." He knew and memorized these laws. Leviticus 24:17, "And he that killeth any man shall surely be put to death." He knew the consequences of his choices, but he sort of shoved those things in the back of his mind and made those decisions anyway. He knew the law, but the scars never occurred to him. Like so many of us, he thought he was above the law, above the rules, but he'd forgotten about the scars. 2 Samuel 1 through 12. God sends Nathan the prophet. God has to confront David face to face because, like so many of us, we commit the sin and we just will not face what we've done till it's slapped in our face hard. Nathan comes and tells David that young story about a rich man who had so many lambs, poor man, that had one that he loved. Nathan tells a story about how the rich man took the poor man's lamb, slaughtered it for feast. And David, of course, throws his outraged fit. He's out to get this guy. Give me the name. I'll have him killed right now on the spot. And Nathan points the finger straight down his throat and says, "You're the guy. You're the man that did it." Now, David confesses his sins. And here we read they're forgiven. 2 Samuel 12, 13, David said unto Nathan, "I have sinned against the Lord." Nathan said unto David, "The Lord also hath put away thy sin. Thou shalt not die." Thus saith the Lord, "Behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine house. I will take thy wives before thine eyes, give them unto thy neighbors, and he shall lie with thy wife in the sight of this son." All of the 51st Psalm is David's confession, his repentance. God even viewed him as sinless, the sins forgiven. But even as the thief that hung on the cross next to Christ was forgiven, he was going to be with Christ in glory that day. Still, he went through the pain and death, crucifixion for his actions. David, forgiven, had to bear the scars of his sins. The old story's familiar, but we're not so familiar with the end results of the story. 2 Samuel 12, 15 through 18. The union of David and this lady had a newborn child. God took its life. David would never see it until he died. Chapter 13, 1 through 14. Just like David had done, his son Amnon decides to have a bad relationship with his half-sister, Tamara. Of course, he can't live with his own guilt. Chapter 13, verse 15, decides to blame it all on her, decides to hate her, his or her older brother. 13, 22, puts hatred in his heart for Amnon, so the whole family is up in arms. 13:28 through 29, the older brother plots and kills Amnon. But having seen that his father didn't do what he thought should be done in that case, the older brother kept that inside of him. It built up to where eventually he tries to steal the kingdom from David. Finally, David, trying not to have the oldest son, the rebel, killed, but his general betrays him, murders the boy anyway. The rest of David's life is framed in wars. 1 Chronicles 22, 8, 9, David is gathering all the materials to build God's first permanent temple and house, but he's denied the chance to build it. And in 1 Kings 1, another son, at the very end of his life, tries to steal the throne from him. Yeah, there is healing. But the injured areas are never as good as new. There's still scars, and scars remain. Scars remain in lives like Samson's. God gave him a world of things. Super strength, blessings. When Samson turned against him, he was captured by the enemies and blinded. Yeah, Samson in the end turned to God, and God gave him one last chance to redeem himself, all that strength back. But he was blind to his death. We all have to live with the scars. Peter denied Jesus three times and had to face to face with God when God asked him three times straight, "Do you love me?" Saul, of course, early on, tried to destroy the church, murder every Christian he could find until he was converted. Afterwards, he tried to join the churches. Finally found one man who would trust him. Ended up spending a good portion of his time traveling around because no church would have him there. They just didn't trust he wasn't going to be an inside spy to destroy him. Other people have to live with our decisions and our scars. Eve's choice, Adam's choice, it's tore through all of creation. All of us condemned by our sin because of what one or two people did at the very beginning. Sometimes we die with the scars. Judas Iscariot, after he betrayed Christ. The scars remain and they affect everything we do. I'm going to flip quickly to Hebrews 11, one verse. Hebrews 11, the great faith chapter, all of these heroes in heaven. Verse 31, By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not when she had received the spies with peace. Listed here in that great hall of faith, part of the lineage of Christ. But here, written down thousands and thousands of years after Rahab's story is told, she's still listed as the prostitute, Rahab. 2,000 years after this was printed out for us, I'm reading it to you. Rahab, gone for 5,000, 6,000 years now. But she's still listed as Rahab the prostitute. If this written word exists in heaven, if it stands forever printed, then forever forgiven, she'll be separated out as Rahab, the prostitute, the harlot. When you make decisions, when the choices look so tempting, you ask yourself, are you willing to live with the scars? Are they scars that you're willing for all those around you, close to you, to live with? Are you willing to die with those things? I'd like to say we're not talking about the little decisions, like color of socks that you wore this evening. Of course, fellas, if you wore pink socks, it's probably already too late for you. I'd like to say that we're only talking about the life-changing decisions. But the problem with that is you never know which small decision might just change your life or change someone else's. From drinking, smoking, church attendance, on-the-job attitude, the shows you watch, music you listen to, books you read, company you keep, and even the clothes we wear. For instance, the best preacher and teacher you know, if he showed up here and preached the best message you've ever heard, wearing a pink bathroom fluffy robe, bunny slippers, and one of those inflatable duckies that they wear in the kiddie pool, would you hear a word he said? Would you listen? But we think clothes don't matter. Clothing style itself can make a huge difference. Sorry for the gals. If the clothing you're wearing turns heads everywhere you go, consider changing your clothing style. Might be just one or two heads you want to turn. And I'm sorry, my personal pet peeve type thing, and I can't say my own girls go by this. You want to put nice little messages and all that. Most of you don't have long, long hair. Print them on the back. Okay? You know what, guys? Staring at your chest, don't turn it into a billboard. Easy enough. Done meddling. Okay, listen, there are no small choices. Everyone is big. But I will change this a little. There's one more thought about scars. True warriors bear the scars of battle. There are scars of soul and scars of heart. You may be the perfect soldier of Christ, but I'm not. I fail, I make mistakes, flat out sin, no excuses there. In Hebrews 12, 5 and 6, God promises chastisement. Read that. And if you've forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto my children, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. He scourgeth every son whom he receives. God promises chastisement, punishment. Moreover, he promises that the punishment falls on those that he loves. The scars will come. Which ones can you live with? Soldiers who survived great battles will often hold up scars as badges of honor. I fought the good fight, and some things are worth fighting for. Tell a story I've told once here. It's about a young girl. Town, a few years back, things were simpler. Small little city. And this girl lost her parents. She went to live with an elderly grandmother. A few years later, the house caught on fire. Again, a small town, one small fire department, and they were gone to the other end of town. Another fire at the same time. The grandmother tried to help get her from an upper floor, did not make it. The girl was seen one of the upper floor windows beating on the glass and screaming. And the neighbors stood around, helpless to do anything. As the crowd gathered, got bigger and bigger, a stranger pushed through, dragging a ladder, threw it up to the side of the house, climbed up, bashed through that glass window, went in. A few minutes later, smoke and flame pouring out, he pops out with a blanket down the ladder, hands it to the one of the neighbors, and limps off into the dark. A couple weeks later, they had a town hall meeting. It's the way it's done in simpler days. They have an orphan girl. We don't have an orphanage. They had to figure out what to do with this girl. Prominent citizens came out. And there were volunteers to take her in. She sat up at the front on a chair, stared at the floor quietly. Teacher would take her in, and the teacher would raise her with just the best possible education. A farmer was willing to take her. She could grow up learning good work ethics out there on the farm. One of the wealthiest citizens in town was willing to take this girl in, offer all that and more, because money could buy it. As the girl sat there and stared at the ground, the chairman at the meeting, anybody else want to speak? From the back of the room, one man stood up, limped to the front, said nothing, stepped in front of the girls, held out his arms, scarred, burnt. The girl looked up in the face, screamed, "You saved me," leapt into his arms, smiled for the one time, and broke into tears and held on him. Chairman took the gavel, quietly hit the podium and said, "Dismissed." There are scars that are worth having, battles worth fighting. I want you to listen to Paul's assessment of his life. It's in 2 Timothy 4, 7 and 8. He says, "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. Not to me only, but unto all of them also that love his appearing." His assessment, hey, I fought a good fight. I finished it. I've kept my faith. Boy, there's a crown waiting for me. But I'm going to go back to 2 Corinthians 11. 2 Corinthians 11, 24 and 25. This is a small list of some of the scars that he bore to keep that fight. He says, "Of the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes, save one. Thrice I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeyings often, in perils of water, in perils of robbery, in perils of mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren." He doesn't even list there prison sentences and, of course, his final death. But the prize to him was worth it all. The scars were worth it. Jesus' assessment of himself. Hebrews 12, 2. "Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." I want to compare that briefly to Philippians 2. Philippians 2, verses 8 through 11. "And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God also hath highly exalted him, given him a name which is above every name, that is the name of Jesus. Every knee should bow of things